The Big Interview Podcast from Pride Radio.
It's The Big Interview with me, Peter. And for this podcast, I'm going to be finding out more about Fighting With Pride. It's a charity which supports the health and well-being of LGBT plus veterans, service personnel and their families. And I'm delighted to be joined by Kate Husband, who's the veteran community worker for the North East of England. Hello, Kate.
Hi.
Fighting With Pride. Tell me all about it. What are its aims and objectives?
Well, Fighting With Pride is a fairly new charity, and it was set up on the anniversary of the lifting of the gay ban in the military. And it was set up in order, as you say, to serve those who were affected by the gay ban. And when the gay ban was lifted, it was great for serving personnel and those who want to join. But those who prior to 2000 had been affected by the gay ban, they were still banned. And the impact of what happened is still relevant. And that's 20 odd years later.
I kind of need to stop you because there'll be people listening and they'll go, a gay ban?
Yep.
Who banned the gays? Why were we banned? What were we banned from?
The military, basically, up to the 2000, although it wasn't illegal in the country, it was in the military. You weren't allowed to serve if you identified as being gay, basically.
But was there no don't ask, don't tell or anything like that? Or was it a case...
Not officially.
Right.
Not officially. But there was obviously a whole... difference of experiences of people who were or who identified or who struggled to identify or who didn't know what on earth to identify with. And unfortunately, some people were investigated, some people were accused, some people were taken to court martial, some people were had to leave the Air Force in the military in disrepute and their career in shatters. Medals stripped, pensions stripped, and that remains 20 odd years later.
It's very strange for me not serving. Is there a form that you have to tick if you're gay or not when you sign up or anything?
I was asked.
So do you have to lie to get in, or
basically if you
or you did?
Yeah, if you knew, if you identified as gay and you knew that, yes, you would have had to have lied. If you were somebody who, because we all have a different story about coming out and how we come to terms with that and how we come to an understanding, some people who perhaps didn't quite know then and knew later on perhaps wouldn't been lying, but then that's a difficult thing to know.
Do you have to out yourself,
yeah, exactly.
You know, halfway through service, thinking, oh, actually, you know, I don't fancy that person anymore. I fancy that gender instead.
Well, I think that every single person will have their own story, yeah, as to their journey through their service life, however short or long it was, and to what happened to them, how they coped, and how they've dealt with it afterwards.
And
everybody's story will be different.
And obviously, we're talking there about sexuality, but then, yeah, there's gender identity as, mm, well. You know, people would have identified as trans either going into the services or identified during it. And, mm, and then I imagine pre-2000, post-2000, it's probably still not a great thing, but pre-2000, I imagine that was a big issue as well.
That's the I know the least about that. And you probably need to talk to other people about that. Yeah. I can only speak from my experience.
But more the culture.
But the culture is, when I served during the gay ban, and the culture wasn't one of acceptance, or it was a hidden subject. It was, you know, things happened.
So tell me your story. When did you sign up? What did you sign up for?
Well, I was first in the Navy, but I was in the Navy part-time in Newcastle at HMS Calliope.
Lovely.
For 4 years. And then I joined full-time, but I joined the RAF.
Right, okay.
Not the Navy.
Why is that? Did you just I can't be doing with those knots.
Well, it was more of a question that since a child, I'd always wanted to join the RAF.
Right.
And when I came to decide which service it was, I did go and investigate both. But at the time, in 85, the RAF was a little bit more progressive in terms of female and how we were employed and what we did and et cetera than the Navy at the time. So I thought, no, I'm joining the Royal Air Force.
And at the time, did you know that you were a lesbian, or was that still something that was going on in your head?
This was 85.
Did you lie, trying to get to?
No, I actually genuinely think I didn't lie. But then again, I don't think I was being honest with myself either.
Yeah.
I think, don't forget, this is 85, Newcastle, you know, no role models, nothing. And it took me a while to actually understand my identity, the whole culture of the land and the landscape and the media and everything was one of shame, of, you know, we're going into the AIDS epidemic here.
Of course, yeah.
And everything that you saw pushed you into that closet, you know. And I think that all I wanted to do, I remember I was only young, was that I wanted to join the RAF. That's what I wanted to do. Everything else was just secondary to me. I wanted to join the... I wanted to move out of Newcastle and I wanted some excitement and adventure.
So you believe those adverts that I used to watch at the cinema where they said, you know...
Travel the world,
see monkeys and Gibraltar absolutely. And everything.
Yeah. I saw RAF Lincolnshire.
Well, hey, you know, wow. No passport or injections for that one.
No.
So it was...
And my experiences then, again, in society as a whole, but also in the forces, was pushing me more and more. I mean, at one point, I think I was scraping the paint off the back of the closet to get further, as far back as I could, you know. And it was just that real confusion of all of this, these messages coming in left, right and centre, that actually being gay was other. It was not acceptable. It was shameful, and you brought shame on your country, and you're this, that, and the other.
And that was pushed at you from the RAF, and we're talking about 85. So Thatcher's in government.
Yeah.
You know, as you say, you know, we've got the AIDS epidemic going on. Section 28 is a few years away, so it's not a great time to be LGBT plus. But was so society had that.
Yeah.
Was there then added pressure when you signed up, or was it a case it was never spoken about?
It was never spoken about. I think this was all, how could I describe it? It was all felt. It was sort of like there, but not, it was never pushed in your face unless something had happened, unless there was a story that came out that a serviceman had been outed and this had happened, dramatic happened. There were a couple of incidents that I know about that I was personally involved with that because of what happened, the talk, you know, the banter that you find in the crew room and things like that was not very conducive to positive, you know, sort of like an image of LGBT people.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily that it was forced or pushed or you were given orders or anything like it. It was just, it hung there, you know. Most of the time, we just went about our normal daily lives, but every now and again, it popped up.
And did you know of others that served? Was there, I want to know if there was a secret handshake or you used to meet by that cupboard on a Wednesday, you know, or was it very much you felt that you were alone and heard of other stories, but you know, we're going back, there's no internet, there's no mobile phones, there's no texting or anything like that. You know, you some people listening to this will forget that, that you are alone. You, going to a pub or a club was a secret knock on a door for some people.
Yeah. I can only speak from my experience.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that from my experience and just how I absorbed everything, you know, and how I struggled and tried to understand myself, I desperately wanted to live a normal life, i.e. a straight life, the acceptable one, and that's what I did. So I actually suppressed everything and I didn't answer any of those questions in my head and I chose to ignore it because it was too... It was just too... I wanted to do my job. I wanted to be in the RAF and I didn't.
That deprived yourself of a lot of experiences at a young age.
It did, yeah. As I'm getting... Oh, at the time, I didn't think it bothered me. As I get older, you tend to sort of think, what if, you know, what? Yeah. The other thing, to answer your question about did you know?
Yeah.
Just because of my experience where I was, sort of like groups and who I worked with, there was never really any discussion about that. And I didn't actually seek it out. So therefore, I wouldn't have been part of any of that. But I would say that the radar, you know, the gaydar bit, you know, sort of like was tweaking a little bit in terms of you wondered. But it wasn't until after I came out years later when I heard about certain people, I was like, yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
How long did you serve?
12, well, just short of 12 years.
And so what happened? What happened? Why did it come to an end? Was that suppression and hiding yourself back suddenly come out to a fore and somebody spotted it in you
or
you admitted it?
No, I hid it completely. And it was so suppressed that it took me probably another few years in order to really identify. And I was actually, what helped was that I came to the end of my time, you know.
All right, so you left.
I chose to leave. And I'd had a back injury and stuff in my career that, I knew that I didn't want to carry on. So there was nothing left for me.
Yeah.
The forces were contracting at the time as well. So there was nowhere to go and it was all change. And I just took the opportunity to go to university and study to become an occupational therapist. And that's a health course, you know, you'll change mental health as physical health. And I went from the military to this health course where everybody talked about everything and everybody was open about everything. And you discussed sexual health, you discussed everything. And I'm like, oh, this is different, you know. Okay. everybody, you know, sort of like...
Everybody's open.
I know.
They're saying words that I don't understand, never mind can say.
Exactly. And it was sort of like a bit sort of like... And they, you know, there were a few gay people on the course and everybody was open and out. And I'm thinking, oh, this, you know, this is a change. and after I qualified, the best thing that happened was eventually I moved to Manchester.
And the rainbow, the path was laid with rainbows and everything was lovely.
Exactly.
You found Oz at the end of the Yellow Brick Road.
I did.
So because you left, because I'm keen to get back to this gay ban that brought us into this part. Because you left, you served your time, you didn't out yourself.
Nope.
Did that mean your pension was secure, your medals were secure, you left with a clean bill of health?
Yes.
Tell me about those people, therefore, who weren't, I don't want to say as lucky because you suppressed a lot. If you would have spoken to a lot of people in your job and you will know a lot of people, without naming names, obviously, but an example of what it was like for somebody to be banned. Is that because they were caught in a homosexual act or they were asked a question and they just opened up to it? Or their lockers were searched and they found a magazine, you know?
A combination of them all, probably.
Right. Okay.
But I do know of somebody who, I mean, I was actually chatting this week to somebody and they said that on Sunday, and they said that somebody had informed the police that they suspected. She was, her room was searched, she was investigated, she was interviewed.
That's the military police, not...
That's the military police, yeah. She was investigated, but nothing happened. Then... because they didn't have enough evidence. And then the same happened to her again. And she basically said the same. The room was searched. They were looked through all of our letters. And she said, fortunately, in those days, we didn't have mobile phones with, you know,
pictures and texts and, exactly. and website searches. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And she said, and then the third time it happened, she said that she was basically asked to leave. She was given a choice. Do you want us to throw you out and oh. not have your pet, or do you want to leave under these X, Y, and Z circumstances, either medical or what have you?
So it wasn't a case, repent and say you're suddenly straight and you can stay. Yeah. It was a case of, we think we've got enough evidence against you. You either go if you're on a cord. So people could say I was discharged because of a bad back or something
yeah,
like that.
She was. That's what happened to her.
But some would have been
Some would have been. I know there are examples amongst my colleagues to yeah. say that there are people who have been been to a court martial.
Yeah.
Which is the military court of law, and found guilty and basically dishonourably discharged. And that's when, you know, your pension is stripped, your medals are stripped and everything. Some people have had been led to a criminal record. Some people have served in the military prison at Colchester.
Do you know, I mean, what kind of numbers, I imagine? Is there a way of documenting, or because some people said it was, you know, for health reasons and so on, you don't know, but did you have a feel on numbers, or
I personally couldn't put a number on that. I think that
I can't imagine it was rare, though. I imagine that, you know, I know gay people who are serving in the military now, and the military has always attracted gay people. So there would have been a lot of us in there.
The inquiry that's going on at the moment, which you'll probably come to, I think they're aiming to get at least 1,000 people to come forward to give evidence. So if you just extrapolate out from that, there must be, I wouldn't know what kind of figure. The trouble is that people haven't caught this information. They haven't got this information. It's hard to come by. And the charity's only been going a couple of years. And, you know, after 20-odd years, this is the first time there's been an inquiry into the subject matter. So...
And how far does it go back? I mean...
You go into the 50s.
And is that... I mean, obviously, because life expectancy, because there's not a lot of people around from the Second World War, etc. Yeah. But this will have gone back... throughout the history of the military.
I know in terms of if they quote from the 50s, I'm not quite sure, sort of like in terms of how it was, whether beyond the 50s it was written down or it was actual formalised or not, but I know we're talking from the 50s onwards, so I'm not quite sure about that.
I want to come on about the positives going forward, but let's hit, you know, the gay ban is lifted. Or has it been fully lifted? Can you now serve in the armed forces? Yeah. And can you be open with that? Or is it still
very... You can still be open. I think, I mean, you've got to recognise now that a military now, and the lifting of gay ban, we have to praise the military in terms of as an exemplar in terms of how they approach LGBT and the fact that people can serve. And I think... am I right in saying this, that they have lifted the restriction on, I could be wrong here, on people who are HIV?
Yeah, I think I've read. I know that pilots now are going through that, and they march in prides, and they're very visible and actively recruit, you know,
absolutely,
within our community.
Yeah, and I think that things have changed so much since 2000, and they've got to be respected for that. But it's like any organisation now, you know, it still has its problems, but so does every organisation. Yeah. But at least there is no ban now and people can openly serve, and it's perfectly acceptable now.
Was that something that happened generically within the military that you're aware of, or was that political pressure from external?
I think it was a bit of necessity coming from the, and I think it's just, you know, sort of like the time and tide, it has to happen. But I think it was the Tony Blair's Labour Party at the time was pushing for that as well. So, you know, there is a time and a place for everything.
It's and but you say that, you know, we say Tony Blair, it's 97, it's 97 through to the 2000s.
Yep.
We're only talking a decade or two ago. Mm. You know, it's not ancient history, and that's something that certainly people my generation remember, but younger people, and hopefully this podcast can help educate and it just remind people of the struggles that our veterans went through.
It does make me, I always remember though at the time thinking, hang on a minute, people who are gay can't serve because they're seen as a security threat. You know, what if the enemy finds out you can, you know, have, I'm thinking, well, that's easy, just lift the ban. You know, simple.
Yeah, I know, you know.
Really simple.
Because there are no straight enemy spies out there trying to seduce anyone, you know, as history has told us. So, Fighting With Pride comes about and it starts doing its great work. What are the things that we should be celebrating about changes that have happened? And what are the things that we can be looking forward to? Or be worried about?
I think that things that we should be happy about, and that we exist for a start. You know, that the actual organisation exists, and we are there to serve and help those in a very, very, you know, minority group that have struggled for so long on their own. I think that the push towards reparation as well is a huge thing. And I think that our two CEOs, Caroline and Craig, have done a remarkable job in keeping that push going, because in January this year, the parliamentary inquiry was announced. And just last week, it was announced that Lord Atherton is leading that inquiry. And he was the first openly gay man in the House of Lords, and he's also from the legal profession, which so hopefully the inquiry will do its job, and we're fairly hopeful on that. And I think that, and the big thing for that obviously is reparation first and foremost, pensions. You know, is there an apology coming? Is there, and then what after that? Medals, other, you know, or the recognition of what people have had to suffer because of, and how we're going to sort all of that out. But also I think that a growing awareness, and I mean, I'm talking here now on radio about this stuff, you know, and it's a growing awareness and the recognition that this group of people exist. You know, we exist here and this is what's happened to us. And people often haven't got a clue that this actually went on.
Yeah.
And actually, we exist to actually reach out to people and say, look, you know, come back, do you need support? And support from people who recognise and understand and can empathise and know you don't have to explain, you don't have to justify, there's no shame here, we understand, we're here to listen, we're here to support, we're here to help. So there's the big thing, which is the push from the government aspect to get change and reparation. Then it's the local area where we can provide that stepping stone, that support, that point of contact to help people locally.
And it's, you know, pensions, medals, everything like that is incredibly important because it's recognition. But pride's an important thing, particularly if you've served in the armed forces, because that's why you do it, a pride of love for country, a love for family. And to be acknowledged is an amazing thing. When we walk around the town and we see the rainbow flag flying because it's pride, it gives us a thrill because we're being acknowledged, and our peers, you know, didn't do what they did or receive the beatings or whatnot in vain, because this is the moment now.
Yeah.
And that must be a big thing for a lot of veterans, that they're being acknowledged.
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a listened to, first and foremost, listen to my story, listened to what happened to us. This was real. This happened. And we're still struggling with it. Nothing has changed. Let's get change happening. Let's get that recognition. And let's get, you know, the fact that I was a military veteran recognised. Doesn't matter what I was, you know, how I identify, you know, either gender or sexuality, is that I was a member of the armed forces and I serve my country.
And now you can march in parades. You can be part of remembrance and so on, and be physically there rather than on the sidelines.
And we will be there in November.
And is that one of the first times?
No, it was the first time last year.
And what was that like?
I didn't, because I've only been in post.
Watched.
I did watch it,
you
actually.
Know, forgetting your post, you are a veteran.
Yeah.
That must have filled you with pride, you know, watching them march locally, you know, in the local areas, but also by the cenotaph, you know, and you know, the big recognition that this is the day that we celebrate armed forces.
I saw
forces.
It. I remember, it's funnily enough, it's the first time I actually heard of Fighting with Pride. I was watching it and I was busy doing something else, and I just took 5 minutes and there it was. And I'm thinking, oh, I didn't know they existed. You know, this is interesting. And I went to find out, and I remember thinking last November, that would be blum and good if I could actually, you know, considering my background, considering that I've just spent 30 years working in health service and mental health and all,
and
you know,
you are.
And a lot of my patients were veterans. Wonder, you know, fast forward to April this year, and suddenly I find myself working.
You're doing a podcast now for it. Look at you, and for my next wish, Santa.
I do have to say one thing, though. Mm-hmm. I do have to say one thing. The more I engage with this, it does have, it brings up things for me to actually deal with. And one of the things that I have to deal with is the fact that I suppressed and I hid, and I came out and nothing happened to me, and I have my pension. And suddenly I find this little thing called guilt creeping up, you know. And so it's sort of like that, hang on a minute. Did I lack the courage? Did I choose? It makes you think like that.
It sounds like you were unfortunately lucky. Because if somebody is being grasped on and they have no, they're living the life that you lived, but somebody points them out, then it's out of their hands, isn't it? You know, and I imagine a lot of people were outed rather than outed themselves.
Yes, yeah. But it does make you feel guilty, and it does make you feel a little bit, they're sort of like, oh, would my life have been different? How would my life have been different if I did, and all of these questions go through your head, and you have to be prepared for that. And it's something that, you know, you have to reconcile in your head that actually, did it affect me? Yes, it did. You know, and you just have to deal with that yourself, you know.
So with that in mind, and appreciating it's a different time. Mm. If I took you back to Kate in 1985, would you go through it as you did, or hindsight's a great thing?
Hindsight is a cruel mistress.
And equally, these were different times, and we can't stress that enough to those who didn't live through the 80s. This was different. But do you think now that you... actually, you know, you were there to serve, and that that's what's come across from you today. You know, that was the thing. Or do you think actually, I saw something happen, and I wish I'd have just given them a wink or a nod or a hand on a shoulder? Or the past is the past, and it's about what I do now.
You can't change your past.
No.
There is absolutely no, and you can tie yourself in knots going, what if? I think knowing myself now, I wish I'd learnt quicker. And more about myself quicker. And then I may not have even joined in the first place. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then again, I can make up 6 different scenarios around that.
Sliding doors, isn't it?
I really, really don't know. You can only move forward with. You can't change the past. The only thing that you can do is move forward. And I like to think that everything that I've done and everything in my past, I'm supposed to be where I am now.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be doing this, and I'm supposed to be helping people. There's a reason for it. And that's where I get a lot of my sense of pride from. And a lot of the feedback coming back from people in the area that I've been out to has been amazing.
And what would you say to a younger person who will be listening to this, who is considering the armed forces as a career?
Mm.
You know, it was a different time.
Yeah.
Does the armed forces support fighting with pride? Are you a bit of a thorn in their side, or do they offer help and support? And would you recommend as an LGBT plus person a career in the army?
I can't answer for how in terms of the engagement with the military as it stands, because we don't. As a VCW, I don't really have anything to do with
the
current. It's everybody who's retired or left the armed forces. In terms of the military, if it's right for you, I recommend the military to anybody because it can do so much good. You know, I've talked a lot about that negative, but I have to say, I learned so much when I was in the military in 12 years. It almost made me be that confident. It gave me the confidence. It gave me a sense of my own ability. It gave me a sense that I can actually do whatever I want to do, which is why I went to university. And there was so much camaraderie, and there's so many friends I made, and so many good times, etc., that I had, that if it is for you, if you're suitable for it, it can be a really good place to go. And as far as I'm aware, you know, they have changed. They are open to gay people. There are gay people who serve and actually thoroughly enjoy it and actually have a brilliant time in there. So I've got no qualms about...
So how you identify and who you love is not an issue anymore?
As far as I'm aware, it isn't. And I know people who serve currently who are gay and they love it.
Well, there you are. If somebody listening to this has been affected, that they, you know, suppress things, if they got a gay ban and were kicked out and need help and support, how do they do that?
Very easy, very simply, just go onto our website and there is a contact sheet on there. Or you can email directly to info@fightingwithpride.org.uk. And can I just mention finally this inquiry? It's really, really important that we want to get this message out.
Right.
The inquiry has started. And from the end of this week, there is a 4-month window in which they are asking people to come forward to give their evidence. And this is a one-time opportunity where people who have been affected by the ban can come forward and tell their story and give their evidence. And if people are interested to find out more, we're asking people, please come forward. Please take this opportunity. You can contact us. Use the info@fightingwithpride.org.uk to contact us about this. And we can help you. There is support. There is help. And we will do our best to help you through the process. But we're getting the message out there to say, please come forward. And if you know anybody who this affects, let them know as well.
And what about if you're a family member who's brother or sister's passed away? Can it be done posthumously? Can you put their stories forward?
I would have to ask about that. It's only just started. We are just the charity. We are not the organisers, etc.
But so still to contact you and raise the question.
Yeah, and we will put those questions forward and we will support that and see what the answer will be.
It's an incredibly worthy charity. We're delighted to be partnering with Fighting With Pride. But the burning question is, 85... Were you a Spandau girl or a Durrani?
Oh, Spandau.
Oh, there you are, gold all the way. Kate, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
The Big Interview Podcast from Pride Radio.